Hi, this is Stevie Wonder.
This is Faith Hill.
And I'm William King.
I'm Lionel Richie.
I'm Thomas McClary.
I'm Marlon Williams.
I'm Walter Clive.
And I'm Ronald LaPre.
We're the Commodores.
I'm Doris Day.
This is Bob Sirois, and you're listening to the Sounds of Christmas
podcast.
Hi, I'm Ken Kessler, and welcome to the Sounds of Christmas podcast. If you're new to this podcast, I want to start by saying thanks for joining us. If you're not new, welcome back. Either way, I'm glad you're here. Now, to avoid any confusion, I want to start off by saying there won't be any music played here. This is a place for conversation. I'll talk about Christmas music and some related topics, sometimes by myself and sometimes with guests. If you're looking for music, just go to soundsofchristmas.com and click on the tree or the player on the front page or on the Listen Now page. We play the best variety of Christmas music all year long. Well, except in October, when we play the best variety of Halloween music. I'm very happy to have New Age folk singer, Bob Sirois back with us. Hi, Bob. Thanks for joining us. I think that in your bio somewhere it said New Age folk or maybe folk New Age, but I feel like there's more to it than that. Is that how you like to be introduced or...
I mean, it's there's a lot of, well, let me go back actually and say thank you for having me on. First of all, Ken, I appreciate it. You've been on before. Appreciate it. Absolutely. I mean, in relation to the music that's on the records, the Christmas records that I've done, it's definitely more folk, New Age oriented for sure. I'd say those are the primary genres. You can bring a little bit of rock in there, not rock, but you can kind of feel the energy behind some of the songs, but it's really more of the folk New Age. So, yeah, that's a great way to introduce me, I think. Yeah. So,
okay. And you kind of cut your teeth in music as a rock guitarist, didn't you? If I remember right.
Yeah, I did actually. In the 80s, I was in high school in the 80s, and I actually started playing when I was like 16. And I was in high school, and of course, a lot of my friends were into the whole 80s scene, the whole glam rock, Motley Crue, Rat, Def Leppard, Poison, all that stuff. That was me. Although people probably look today and they say, "That's you, really?" And I say, "Yeah, believe it or not, that was my motive to play the guitar." And I went out and got some lessons and started learning how to play that way of playing. I mean, really, I did that shredding kind of stuff way back then. Can't do it anymore, but I could then. And then I became a rock guitar player really from that. And then eventually, as it went into the 90s, I started getting involved with like more alternative rock in the bands, band that I was in, things like that. So I was a rock guitar player for a long time. It wasn't until the late 90s, mid to late 90s. When the John Denver connection kind of came in, and that just blew the doors open and changed everything.
I know we talked about that before, but since you brought it up, how did that happen?
There's a story. Let me start in 1996. And I remember it was December 1996. And my parents at the time were looking for a new stereo system. They had still been using the record players, the big record player. You store all your records in there from way back in the 70s, and that just wasn't cutting it anymore, obviously. And so, they wanted some help, and I knew a lot about that. So we went to a place called Tweeter. I think it was called Tweeter or something like that. I don't know if you guys have that down in your neck of the woods, but up here we did, and I hooked them up with a CD player, receiver, surround sound speakers, the whole thing. We went the whole gamut. They didn't know what I was talking about, but I knew what I was doing. So did this, get the stuff back home, hook it up. But of course, he wants something to play, and Dad's like, well, what do we do? So he went after he got an Elvis CD that he had on a record at one time, and then a John Denver CD, which was the greatest hits. And I hadn't heard this stuff in, 15 years, maybe even more, probably 20 years. And all of a sudden he puts it in, starts playing it, and I'm hearing it, and I'm thinking, wow, oh my gosh, I remember that song. And then the next one comes on. I remember that song too. And I just thought, these were great tunes. What a great album. So I went out and my brother comes to me and says, well, what do you want for Christmas this year? Give me John Denver's greatest hits on CD. And so we did. And that was it. It was really just that did it. But really the relationship of how I came to know his music was from in the 70s into the early 80s when my dad and my parents used to listen to the stuff in the house, and I heard it over and over again. So I knew it, just didn't really think of it from any vantage point other than that. That's what they're into. Here's what I'm into. So all of a sudden I'm like 29, 30 years old, and the whole thing just changed. And I started getting into John Denver's music, bought one record after the next. And then one day I said, man, these guys are good. They're just good musicians and they're clean. It's all there. I said, I've got to be able to do that. I have to be able to play to do that. I want to be able to play like that. And so I dove in and found out real quick that I was going to have to take a huge step back to take a step forward with that. And it took me several years to I say perfect it, not perfect, but to accomplish the ability to do, what they did. And that was it. That's what did it. It was really kind of it was probably the most groundbreaking point in my time playing as a musician and a guitar player and a songwriter of any other time I've had. And without, in fact, I believe that moment, that time defined everything I've done since then.
For anybody who's listening who wasn't around in the 70s, you probably can't wrap your brain around this, but that Greatest Hits album, that first Greatest Hits album from John Denver, almost everybody had a copy of that. That's how big it was. He was huge. He was everywhere. He had hit after hit after hit on the radio. This was just giant. This was just a huge part of the musical catalog of the 1970s. It just can't, I know it sounds like I'm exaggerating or something, but I'm not.
No, you're not. You're definitely not. I what you're saying is 100% entirely precise. It's true. In fact, and many people may not know this, but one trivial piece of the business piece of it is that John Denver actually ended up becoming a bigger seller with that album and others after it than Elvis ever was. And believe it, you know how big Elvis was. I mean, let's face reality. One of the biggest, and he ended up being he ended up selling more records than even Elvis did. So that tells you that they say John Denver kind of owned the 70s. Elvis was the 50s and the Beatles were the 60s, and all of a sudden you've got John Denver in the 70s. And I believe that's somewhat true. So you're right, I agree with you.
I haven't dug into the research part of it to see just how dollars and cents or units sold, how big he was. But I just remember we had a copy of that record in our house, and everyone I knew, and I had friends who would go on to be huge Van Halen fans, and but there was a John Denver Greatest Hits album in their home, and it was everywhere. I mean, he was so big. He went on to be in Oh God. He did. He did a much beloved Christmas special with the Muppets.
Yeah, he did. I remember that. That was great.
That album still sells really big today.
It does. It does. And it's funny that you say that because I also, in addition to, releasing the albums and things that I do with the music that I create, I also work in the school system as a teacher and teaching kids. And I would have never even imagined this, but it's ironic that every single kid that comes into school, I don't care if they're in first grade, eighth grade, or whatever, they all know Country Roads. They've heard it before, and if I played it for them many times in school. I'll play it with them and do it in concerts where they're actually performing it. And as soon as I start playing it, they all go nuts, and then they want to hear it over and over again. It just to show you how big a song that was and how much of a staple it became, even still today. That song, maybe a couple of others by John Denver, are still out there creating waves, and it's pretty amazing thing when you think about it. So yeah, that turned me around. It just completely flipped my way of thinking in terms of musicianship and what I wanted to do.
I was talking to somebody a couple years ago who had just put out a Christmas album, and he was talking about being on tour, and I think it was Ireland, and they wanted more, and so he pulled out Country Roads and he played that, and the place just exploded. They were so excited, and it was like every person there knew all the words and were singing along. And that's just, I mean, that's just amazing. And this was sometime in the last few years that that happened. And John Denver's been gone 25, 30 years, somewhere in that
Yeah,
ballpark.
1997. So we're talking 28 years. Yeah, it's been a long time. Yeah, that's true. True. I agree.
But it's just amazing that when you talk about big in America, and then you look at, on the other side of the big pond, it's an entire audience that wasn't there for music that was like John Denver, but they all still knew all the words.
Yes,
it's
it's true.
just amazing.
It is amazing. It is an amazing thing. And I think if there's one thing that I regret, oh, maybe it's not a regret, it's more that I feel like I wish I had experienced this, is I never had a chance to see him in a live setting. I mean, I started getting back into him in 96, and literally less than a year later, he passed away. So, but I can assure you, if he had still lived for a while, I definitely would have. That would have been on my list.
Yeah, I'm sure. Now we talked a few years ago, and I don't want this to be boring for you or
Oh,
for
not at
anybody who
all.
heard that before. I'm going to put a link in the show notes to that episode, and we talked in that about more about John Denver and about your journey, and it's very cool. And I'd love to hear some of those stories again, but I don't want this to just be a rehash. But
Course.
we talked about that, and we talked about, I think it's your five previous Christmas albums, right? Five?
Is it? Well, yes, six total, including the newest one. So
Okay.
yes, we
So
talked about the
we
previous
talked about the five earlier ones.
one.
Twilight had just come out. So if you want to hear about all of those, check the show notes and click on that link. But you've got a new album just out, Aspen Mountain Christmas. And this is so cool because we were talking before we started actually doing this interview, and you were saying how you did some new things, but they're some of the same things, and it's a delicate line to walk. I used to work in music stores way back a long time ago when people were buying records and
I
CDs at
remember those
stores.
days.
And one of the things, and everybody who worked there always laughed at this kind of thing, but whenever an artist came out with a new release, there would be customers who came in who were fans who either, oh, it sounds like everything he's ever done, or they would say, this sounds completely different. That's not what I wanted in a new whoever album. It's got to be a tough line to walk. So, you didn't reinvent the wheel with Aspen Mountain Christmas, but you did do some new stuff. What is some of the new things that people can look for or listen
Well,
for?
yeah, I mean, it's if like well let me I kind of have to go back a little to sort of get there. As you mentioned, I've got the six albums now with the new one, and the first one way back when is really almost all instrumental except for two tracks which were vocal tracks. It was very bare bones. It was very mostly all acoustic guitars and very folky and very dry, not a lot of production, so that was its own thing. And then I kind of evolved from there, and every album I kind of advanced myself to a place that I feel at that moment I want to be, or where I want to go, I should say, not where I am, but where I want to go. And as I kind of went from album to album, more and more vocal tracks are starting to present themselves. So it wasn't until Twilight, the last record 3 years ago, that was primarily a vocal record. I think there's like maybe two songs on there out of the 18 that are instrumental only. So this one maintains that. So if we're talking about similarities, this Aspen Mountain Christmas, the new one, is a vocal production again. Out of the 16 songs, there are, is it again? I think two. There are two on there that are instrumental only. The rest are vocal. And one of the things that I've done is I've really incorporated last record, this record as well, even more on this record, a lot more drum performances. I had never really played drums until probably the past 6 years or so, and so I learned how to play, and I do a lot of the drum tracks now. I do pretty much all of them. That kind of brings it to a new place. I do a lot more strings than I used to do. Where we're talking about, like for example, the opening track is gosh, I'm forgetting what. Oh, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. That one is the Amy Grant version she did back in the early 90s off of the is it Home for Christmas album, I think it's called.
Think so.
And that is obviously for her, it's an actual orchestra that's performing, doing their thing, or I should say a string orchestra. And I went and duplicated that much as I could. So it's things like that that I'm doing that are different, involving, the clarinet, which I've never played before, and I'm starting to do that as well. So a couple little things here and there that I've done with regard to that. Gosh, I mean, with regard to vocals, I mean, you'll notice on this record, there are even larger vocal productions happening with a lot of harmonies, a lot of space, in some cases choir type approaches where you have literally background vocals in a song, like that might have as many as, you know, 15 to 20 vocals going on that are overdubbed and they're, you know, they're mixed in different ways to create, you know, things that I had never done before. Until this record and the last one, I would have never done that before. I'm not even sure I had the capability to do it back then. So things like that. This album in particular is much more produced. There's just a lot going on. I took the liberty to do songs I would have never even thought of doing before. Feliz Navidad being one of them. I mean, that's, you know, that's not an easy song to pull off. I mean, the bass part in there alone is like crazy. Of course, I farmed that out. That's not me doing it. That's John Denver's bass player pulling that one off. But The Grinch is another one that honestly, 3 or 4 years ago, someone would have asked me to do that song. I would have probably said, yeah, probably not. And in fact, I think you even brought it up in our last podcast. I think when you had alluded to the Snow Miser, Heat Miser song, and you're like, wow, that was kind of cool. And would you ever do The Grinch? And you and one other person around that same time brought it up to me. And at that point, I think I believe my answer was, I don't know, maybe. And that's as far as it went. And then about 6 months later, I decided I'm going to give this a gander. And I did. And so that is another, just, you know, it's a place I went that I would have never gone before stylistically. And in terms of like the storytelling element of it, that's huge. And then the vocals for me, I did a lot more vocals on this record than I've ever done on any album before. In fact, Twilight has a handful of vocal tracks from me. Prior to that, I don't think there were any. And on this one, there's even more. And I took it to a new level where I'm actually, you know, just involving a lot more harmonies and, you know, creating more space, doing a lot of things I've never done before. The other thing I did here, I don't know if you've noticed this, but I did a bunch of medleys. So I think there's 4 or 5 tracks on there that are literally 2 songs that are put together into one. I did that for multiple reasons. The first one was I didn't anticipate I'd be doing another vocal album after this, because now this is the second one. It's kind of like the last one. I don't want to reduplicate too much. And I have an idea for something else down the road. It's going to be very different. So, there's a lot of songs I wanted to do. And I thought, well, I don't have 24, you know, 30 tracks on the record. So I thought, well, how do I fix that problem? So I did one. I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. I did another. And that was it. So those are some of the differentials, I guess. I probably have to even think more into it to know or to see. But there's instrumentation that is performed in there that is unlike anything I've done before in terms of how it's performed. There's a lot happening there. The song Wonderful Christmas Time, the Paul McCartney classic, that song, just the way it's performed, the sounds that are being used, everything is just very, well, it's very 1970-ish or 80-ish, because obviously that's the time he did it. But I felt I and we were able to bring it to a place where that song and others, where it actually, you do still feel like you're kind of back there hearing it then, but yet it's updated in terms of quality today, in terms of what you'd hear, you know, from sound reinforcement today. So, yeah, I mean, those are some of the primary focal points that I can think of.
Well, and one of the things I noticed from this is that something that you did that you can't really do in any other genre, but it's okay in Christmas music. Mm-hmm. You have secular and non-secular songs mm-hmm. mixed in. Yeah. And, you know, for Christmas music, I think that's fine, because I think mm-hmm. people who like Christmas music mm-hmm. like it all.
Right.
I mean, there are some who only want to hear the hits.
Yeah.
And, okay, if that's Christmas to you, that's fine.
Right, but, right.
You know, you've got like one of the medleys that you were mentioning, Joy to the World and Hallelujah Chorus.
Right.
Between Let It Snow and Winter Wonderland
yeah.
and Dan Fogelberg's Same Old Lang Syne.
Right, right.
And most people listen to that would not even, you know, not even bat an eye. Yeah, it's Christmas music.
It is. I mean, I probably branch out more now than I used to when it comes to taking some opportunities to bring songs in that can exist with these songs, but yet not might not be necessarily Christmas, like in the whole realm of Silent Night and Away in a Manger and, you know, songs like that. But I mean, like Same Old Lang Syne, it's not a Christmas song. He didn't write it as a Christmas song, Dan Fogelberg. However, because of the fact that it relates to New Year's in its own right, Same Old Lang Syne, I think people kind of relate to it that way to a degree. And also the story he tells in there, it sort of became a song that I think people, including myself, listen to a little more on the holidays for some reason. It just because of that you know, connection. So to me, it works, like you mentioned in here. And, you know, I'm looking here. I've got the CD in front of me here. Just it's funny. I have to actually look at it to remember the tracks. But, you know, I mean, like Christmas for Cowboys, one of the few John Denver tunes on here, the only one actually in this case. Christmas for Cowboys is a song that not everybody knows it, but when they hear it, they make a connection to it because of the lyrics and how earthy it is and how real and human and how, you know, it relates to something that is past and present, an important piece of our country and the holiday at the same time, and the appreciation of what really matters, you know, in the world, things like that. So I agree with you. I think I dive in and I try to mix it up. I do feel like I've got a bunch of classics on here, but at the same time, I like to explore things that are unique and different. And this may sound a little bit strange, but what I usually am focused on is kind of going after what I want to hear in the song. So I don't worry too much about, you know, if other people are going to like it or not. I know some people will, some people won't, and that's always going to be the case. But I try to please myself first, and it's not easy to do because you know how that goes. Artists are kind of that way, but I do try to do that because at the end of the day, I want to be able to come back and listen to it at any time in the future and be happy and be proud of what I've done. And I've gone down the road many, many, many years ago, even before I started doing my solo Christmas albums, where you're kind of doing what you know the record industry wants you to do. And then all of a sudden, within a year, you don't want to look at the record. You don't want to hear it because you don't care, because it's really not you. And that's so I'm always true to myself and what I would like to envision.
Now, and I say this almost every time I talk to an artist, and I apologize to people who listen to this podcast who are tired of hearing about it, but that kind of thing comes through because there are so many. I mean, I get so many songs sent to me every year, and some of them are just songs that it sounds like to me that the artist was sort of told to do a Christmas record,
right?
Or, you know, steered that way, or it was somebody's idea, or they just weren't into it and they did it. My favorite whipping boy for this is Jingle Bell Rock, just because that's so popular and so many do it. I was really excited 3 or 4 years ago when I got a single was sent to me of Jingle Bell Rock by an 80s artist.
Oh, wow.
Whose name most people would know. And I listened to it and I was so disappointed because it could have been anybody. It didn't sound like them.
Okay.
It was very paint by numbers, Jingle Bell Rock. Right. And it was really disappointing. And I was very excited because when somebody you haven't heard from in a while puts something out and you hear them and you recognize that it's them.
Yeah.
I mean, Paul McCartney could put something out today and you'll recognize his voice. He doesn't sound like Band on the Run Paul McCartney anymore or yesterday.
No.
But it's been 50 more or more years since then. Yeah.
But it's
none
still
of us sound the same.
No, no. A lot of changes as we get older.
Yeah. But when I listen to tracks from Aspen Mountain Christmas, it's, you know, this isn't something that was hastily put together because you were racing against the clock and you had other things you wanted to do. You can tell that everything that you did on this was, you know, on purpose to get the result that you got. Yes. I just look at this and I'm on your website and it's Bob Sirois, S-I-R-O-I-S. OISmusic.com. And you need to check that because I think there's a hockey player with the same name.
Yeah, there is actually. Yeah, it's from back in the 70s, I think. It says, Robert Sirois.
So BobSiroisMusic.com, and you can find out more about the album, and you can also click and buy it. But I'm just looking at the credits and all of the instruments that you play.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, kudos to you. I don't want to just read down the list of everything that you played, because it will go on for some time. But it really is amazing when you get to, like, just the first track, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. Mm-hmm. Molly Weaver sings vocal, and then there's Bob Sirois, and you've done the arrangements. You play keyboards and bass keyboards and acoustic guitar and percussion, glockenspiel, chimes. It's all you. Yeah. And that's, I mean, you know, I had mentioned Paul McCartney a minute ago, and that's the kind of thing that and I'm sure other artists do this too, but that's the kind of thing that Paul does, because he wants it done a certain way.
Exactly.
So
he's
going to do it, and then it'll be done that way. But every song, you've got 3, 4, 5 lines of instrumentation that you have arranged and done and performed. It's just amazing. You had mentioned a few minutes ago clarinet that you had never played before. Just out of curiosity, how many other instruments on just this album did you play for the first time?
Well, gosh, that's a good, actually, I can't say clarinet was the first time. I did play it on one song, last album too, that one. But gosh, this is unbelievable. I'd have to actually look. What did I play for the first time on this album? You know, there's a cello kind of thing going on that I did. And then I'm trying to think here.
I see some brass on a couple of
these. The brass is, of course, that's not actual, like, me, you know, using a trombone or a trumpet. Those are actual, I'm doing those on keyboards. You can actually achieve that without a problem today with the sounds that they have. So that, I have to admit, brass is not, I've jumped into trying to play trumpet before. I'll tell you what, it's not easy. It's tough. A lot of that I'll play on keyboards, but approaching those instruments, it's, how do I explain this? It's not like you say, okay, cool, I'm just going to, you know, I know my chords. I know all my chords on the keyboard, and all I have to do is figure out what chord they're playing, but it's not that way. So if you're listening to, like, Feliz Navidad, obviously there's a lot of melodic progressions that the brass is doing. So the first thing you really have to do is you have to, first of all, learn what it is. Then you have to identify which brass instruments are doing what in harmony, sometimes in unison, and then figure out how to play them. And then you have to play them in a way that you don't normally play a keyboard or piano, because it doesn't sound the same if you do it that way. So those are the things that you have to kind of, and honestly, you kind of trial and error it. So you get into it, like, okay, cool, I'm going to do this. And you put it down, and like, ooh, okay, that's not working. And here's why it's not working. So then you go back to the drawing board and you figure it out, and you learn it, you relearn it, and do it again until you get it. Now, once you get it the first time, then at that point in the future, you understand and you know how to approach it if you need to utilize that approach again. So it's that way, not just for brass, but other instruments, sounds, whether they be sounds or instruments being used. You kind of, the first time in, you get pushed down a little bit, because you don't know quite what to expect. Once you do determine how to put it together, then it takes on a mind of its own, then you learn. That's how I approach it. So it's trial and error. You mentioned earlier a little bit ago that everything on here is intentional. It was done on purpose. And it is. There are many times when I'll start working on a song, and I know in my mind what I want to do. I can see it, and I kind of know where things are going to go, and I'll start working on it. But then sometimes you have to go back to the drawing board because something just didn't work out the right way. Not because you did something wrong, just because something you didn't anticipate, you know, and those are things that, so there are times when I'll start a song and, like, Same Old Lang Syne, I'll give you a story on that one. That I jumped into that song because there's me singing on here. There's also a guy named Ken Rose who's singing on here too. Good friend of mine. We were in a band together for 16 years, so we've known each other a long time. And he's a great singer. Guy's a phenomenal singer. And I'll send him, you know, the tracks and the music, and he'll do the vocal. So I had asked him a couple years ago. I said, yeah, so, hey, you know, he had done one song for me. And I said, so what are some of your favorite Christmas songs? So he starts throwing songs at me I never thought of. So Wonderful Christmas Time, you know, Happy Christmas. And then he mentioned the Same Old Lang Syne. And there might be, I think there's another one on here he mentioned as well. I'll Be Home for Christmas. And I thought, you know, I never considered those songs. Those are cool songs. They're some kind of non-traditional in some ways, but they're great tunes. And I thought, you know, let me look into that. So I did. And when we got to Same Old Lang Syne, we've all heard that song so many times over the years, you can kind of recite it, you know, word for word. And I thought, oh, okay. I said, this song won't be too bad to do. I said, it just, because it's, you know, it sounds like a simple tune. And so I was wrong. I was about as wrong as they come on this one. I dove in and I start recording it. And I said, okay, well, there's the piano is the primary instrument in Dan Fogelberg's version. Cause he was a multi-instrumentalist as well. So like on that song, he played pretty much everything himself. So long story short, he was piano. That was the main instrument for chords. And I thought, well, I'm a guitar player. So that's where I'm going. So I did the guitar. And because it's a guitar, because you have to approach the guitar differently from a piano in terms of movement, even though I chose the same tempo he did, it sounded, when I started layering instruments in there, it sounded slow. And I'm like, ooh, this is logy. And I'm thinking, okay, what's going to happen when I send it to Ken and he sings, you know, is it going to change it too much? And of course, I didn't know. And I thought, you know, I was hemming and hawing. I didn't want to have to go back and redo all this stuff because it's so much work. And so I went into Pro Tools because that's what I use to record. And I go in there and I said, okay, there's got to be a way to slow this thing down without re-recording. And so I'm going through it. But of course, unless it's an instrument that you're doing MIDI that's actually digital, then the instrument will have artifacts and different noises you don't want, pops and clicks and stuff. So I'm like, all right. So I finally one day had to say, I got to go back and I got to redo it. So I did. So I went back. I started it over again at a faster tempo with the guitar and everything else. I started building around it. And sure enough, that brought it to a better place. But it still wasn't where I wanted it to be. And so I still needed the bass in that song, which I didn't do. That's Alan Darimo from the John Denver band that did that. He's just, you know, he's a great bass player. So I go to him for some of the more complex parts. He put that bass part down. That's what did it. As soon as that bass part was in there, the movement, there's a lot of movement to the bass part, and that movement creates some of the tempo and speed. That's what my head was missing when I'm trying to think about why is this loging? Why does it sound slower yet the tempo is consistent? And that's what did it. So my point is that song turned out to be probably one of the more difficult songs to put down on tape, although I came into it thinking, hey, piece of cake. Not a piece of cake.
You know, it's funny. That song, for a long time, I never considered it really a Christmas song.
Yeah.
And I came across this blog a year or two ago by I did an episode about it. It wasn't a blog. It was an article in a college paper that this woman had written about hearing this song, and it was for the first time.
Yeah.
And there were several things that it brought up in her, but the first thing that I latched onto was that it takes place on Christmas Eve.
Yeah, yes,
snow is falling Christmas Eve. Yeah. It takes place on Christmas Eve, so it requires Christmas.
Yeah.
The whole thing doesn't happen. And I liken that to... really to Die Hard and to the song Last Christmas.
True, because
neither of those are really about Christmas.
No.
But if it wasn't for Christmas, they wouldn't exist. They wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, that's true.
So I feel the same about this. And it's a song about, you know, reconnecting and it has lots of things that we all feel at this time of year. But that it's snow is falling Christmas Eve is the first thing. And
exactly.
So that's required to. And I look at this, that song and the Joy to the World Hallelujah chorus, which are back to back on the new album, and just all of the stringed instruments that you play, because a guitar is not a guitar is not a guitar. And you've got acoustics 6 and 12, you've got electric guitar, you've got an electric slide, you have a ukulele and a mandolin.
I got all those hanging around here.
Yeah, and it's just because you can play one doesn't mean you can play the other. They're not the same. They share some things,
They do. They do.
but just because you could be a great guitar player, and if you've never played mandolin before and you pick one up, you're going to embarrass yourself.
At first, yeah, you will. And it's true because well, first of all, the chord shapes are different. Second of all, you've got four strings that are doubled, so that feels different. And the neck is up, it's very small, so your fingers have a whole different I guess, situation they have to contend with. I mean, admittedly, ukulele is not too bad. Ukulele is a little bit more like guitar because although a lot of the chord shapes are similar, but they're just different chords. So if I play a D chord on the guitar and then I play a D shape chord on the ukulele, it's a G on a ukulele, but the shape is the same. So there, but mandolin is a whole different situation. But the interesting thing, so you mentioned that song, Joy to the World, Hallelujah Chorus. The story, I'll give you a story on that one. That song was not supposed to sound like what you heard or what you're hearing or what people will hear. That became an instrumental. It was not instrumental at first. It started off as an instrumental where you had the guitar doing a piece of Joy to the World and Hallelujah Chorus up to a point, and then everything stops and it kind of goes into a little bit of a break, and then it kicks in with this with a huge drum hit, a kick drum hit, and then it builds into something at the end where you have a lot of stuff going on, strings and cello and things like that. So what was actually originally happening there, I actually did. The like Hallelujah Chorus usually has this huge chorus effect, with a couple hundred people singing, and it's a big song and it's really powerful. And I put that on tape. I did it. And then as I was listening through over time, it sounded good, but it wasn't what I felt strongly about, and when I think of Hallelujah Chorus, I imagine myself at like a huge, UConn arena or something like that, where Boston Pops is there with a huge choir in the background and they're doing it. And I've seen that done before, and it's amazing. It's like it and I thought, you know what? I'm not going to be able to connect that way with this because it's not that. Yeah, sure, I have that many vocals going on, but it's not that. It's just not. It's not in the right environment. It's not in the right element. It's just not. So I finally said, you know what? No, I said, I'm gonna go and I'm gonna do something completely different and unique. And I'm gonna go and I'm gonna do a strings, meaning, plucked strings version of this song. And that's what led me to that place. And then after I put that together in that manner, I really liked it. I was happy that I did that. So it's things like that that you change when you're midstream because, yeah, this is good, but it's not as good as it could be, So, yeah, that's how my head works.
You had mentioned that you had a couple members of John Denver's band helping you out on some tracks, and your friend Ken Rose, and I had mentioned Molly Weaver at the beginning. You also have a couple people who may still live in your house.
They do. Well, more or less. One of them's in college now, so I don't think she's too far from doing her own thing.
But I know they were both on Twilight.
They were.
And I think it's so cool that they still want to do this as they're getting older.
So I don't honestly want to do it. I don't think that they're I mean, they're not sitting there saying, no, Dad, no, there's no possible way I'm gonna consider that. It's more like, you want me to do what? And so it's really my way of connecting with them and involving them with something because they're into other things. They're not into music, or no, I shouldn't say they're not into music, but they're not musicians, they're going down different paths. So to involve them with something that they otherwise may never be involved with, that's really what the point of it is. But My oldest daughter, Madison, she sang the lead part, actually, in the choruses of Happy Christmas, which is the part for John Lennon that Yoko Ono did. You know, I like to think that Madison kind of pulled it together a little better, but we're not going to get too far into that one.
Yeah.
But she hit it really well, but she didn't anticipate that she could, and she did. And she sounds great doing it. And then she did some backing vocals in there along with myself and Ken to try to, you know, create that chorus or that choir kind of an approach. And so she did some singing on that. And I think she might have done a little bit more on something else. I forget. And then my youngest daughter, who's really not into singing, I'll usually have her play, you know, a small keyboard part here and there, things like that. Yeah. And that's really it. But again, it's you know, it's when I ask them, they're like, okay. That's it. And then I'm like, all right. Then after that, they're like, hey, listen, Dad's got to get the camera. I'm going to go get a picture with the headphones on and the mic. But Dad, wait, I haven't showered yet or whatever. It's all like, you know how it is. So that's kind of how it is.
Anything about this new album that I haven't asked you about yet that you wish I would have?
Maybe not so much wish. I mean, you know, I always put at least two originals on every Christmas album I do. And that's really me just keeping myself involved with writing material and creating it. So, I mean, the songs that I write could really be Christmas oriented or not, honestly. And like, for example, Icicle is a song that was influenced by Enya, actually. Well, not by her directly, but by her music. And that has nothing with Christmas, but it definitely has a winter theme, you know.
Right.
So it definitely works, and it's definitely, you can hear the new age in there. That's a big piece. And then the last song, the last Eclipse Dad song. Now that's for my dad because he passed away last year, and I wrote it for him. That song can go on any album. It can go on, you know, an original album, go on a Christmas album, and go on whatever. I mean, it just because it is what it is. It stands for what its own thing. But those songs. And the original songs on my prior records all mean quite a bit to me because I do spend a lot of time trying to make sure that they are as powerful as they can be and that they add value to the album. So those are, yeah, but that's definitely me. Like the last Eclipse, you know, that has a folky kind of nature to it, but then you've got, you know, the cello and then you've got the other string parts and the voice patches going on and things that make create a very moody kind of pensive sort of sound, you know, that's definitely me. When you think, if you listen back to some of the other albums I've done, there's always at least one or two originals on every album that are kind of, I hate to say depressing, but kind of, you know, on the more somber side. That's me. I don't know. I'm not saying I'm somber. I'm just saying that is me when it comes to writing. That's where I go a lot of times. So yeah, I mean, the originals, I think, add some value. When I look here, you know, gosh, Santa Claus Coming to Town, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, you know, I mean, gosh, 10 years ago, if someone had asked me to do those, I'd have been like, yeah, no, we're not gonna do that. But ever since I've been teaching in the school system for so long, obviously I've attached myself to some different things that I wouldn't have before. And that medley I like because I like what I did is I combined them in a way that allows it to be, well, here's Santa Claus coming to town, we're singing the song, and here he's coming with Rudolph, right? Because it's all part of it. And I incorporated it like that. You know, so things like that, that for me have meaning, a lot of meaning that I really like to kind of focus on. And again, as I kind of look through this here, O Come Emmanuel, that song, I mean, we've all heard it before in different contexts. That was a tough song to put together. When you listen to the vocals in there, there's a lot of, a lot of vocals happening, and the sound in there is definitely not really as much like me. I needed to try to sing it in a way and try to create. I wanted to create this sort of a Gregorian kind of, not chant, but a Gregorian sound, that kind of, you know, that's the monk sound when it comes to singing. I don't know how else to describe it. I wanted to kind of create a little bit of that, not too much. And so that was tough to do and to pull that off. And then, you know, again, there I ended up playing, that's one of the ones where I played the clarinet. and which actually worked out pretty well. I
And
mean,
that
as
one,
a
I,
yeah, you know, yeah.
and O Come, O Come, Emmanuel also has a very atmospheric quality to it with the thunder and rain.
It does, yeah, at the beginning. I have to say, admittedly, there's a movie called is it Nativity or The Nativity or something?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, the
Yeah,
nativity.
it's because it's gosh, I don't know, it came out 15 years ago or so, I forget, but it's a very good, very well done movie. It wasn't hugely popular, but I like it. And there's a version of that song that sounds a little bit like that at the very beginning. And it's very haunting sounding. So I always sort of was, you know, driven, or whenever I would hear it, I always thought, gosh, that just sounds, it sounds like heaven, kind of. It's sort of how I was thinking. And that's, I had never done a vocal version of it. I've done an instrumental version of the song many, many years ago, but vocals I didn't. And so that's, so I wanted to kind of try to capture that to a degree, but yet still allow it to be me with some of the guitars and some of the other instrumentation that I use, and also me singing. So it, you know, differentiates it a little bit. And during the choruses, I have a girl, I say a girl because she's literally a high school girl. I used to teach her when she was in grade school, and she sings one of the high parts in the chorus parts. And so that kind of makes it a little more angelic and brightens up that part, which I kind of like how there's a differential between that and the verse refrain parts. Yeah, so the song came together pretty well. I was happy with it.
So Aspen Mountain Christmas is out now, and I'll put a link down in the show notes. If I hadn't said that already, I'll put a link down there so you can click
Great.
on that
Thank
and
you.
find it wherever you stream and download music. You had mentioned that you had ideas for something next. Is
Yeah.
there anything that you can share or?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah. I do. I know last time I talked to you, I didn't have a straight answer because I wasn't sure if I was definitely going to do another album like this. But this juncture, I do have some plans. So the plan is for the I am doing another Christmas album, and it's going to be all instrumental. There's going to be no vocal at all, not even a whisper, nothing. And nothing against vocals, has nothing to do with that. It's because two reasons. First, I want something that has that, oh my gosh, that acoustic kind of an approach where you've got, you know, just a basic acoustic guitar, minimal tracks, you know, doing the chords and the melody, but very classical folky kind of an approach. And I think I this goes back probably about 3 years ago. It was we tend to put on that whole NORAD thing at Christmas time, and the Santa tracker. In this particular year, that's the kind of music that they had, but it was really very creative, very well done. It takes some of the simplest songs out there for Christmas time, but it really was reflective, and it brings a complexity to them that you don't think can exist, and it does. And so I really want to go down that road and explore that. So you'll see an album next time that will be really all instrumental. You might have some songs that don't have more than one or two tracks going on, maybe some that have a handful more. You'll probably see a little less of the new age influence. I say probably, but you never know what could happen. And that'll be the next one. The plan is to record that and release that 3 years from now. Then, within about a year or so after that, I'm going to release like a, I don't want to call it greatest hits because that's not what it's going to be called, but it's going to be taking the best of the John Denver and Amy Grant stuff that I've done and putting it together in some sort of a promotional album, although I haven't determined exactly what that means, but it's going to be something along those lines. Then, probably around the same time, I'll be releasing an all original record. The all original record will not be Christmas. It won't be titled as a Christmas record, but it will contain all the originals that I've done, and it will probably add on another five or six new ones that I add to it. And yeah, so that's going to take me to about 2029.
Wow.
Yeah, I know, it's a kind of a big plan. Hey, you know what? I'm not far from being retired here, so hey, I got to find some stuff to do, right?
I just look just looking at the instrumentation for from Aspen Mountain Christmas, doing one that's just instrumental,
Yeah.
I would imagine that's going to take a little time to put together.
It won't be easy. I mean, it'll definitely be more complex from certain vantage points. I think the easier piece of it, quite honestly, will just be the fact that there'll be a lot less track management, as opposed to, I mean, some of the songs on this album here, I can tell you, have as many as 40 to 50 tracks on them. There's that much going on, some of these songs. That will not be the case. So that will minimize the time element. But the I based upon past experience, I think the challenge will be the fact that when you create a folky slash classical type song that the entire thing is self-contained with the guitar part, doing the chord changes, finger style, whatever, and you're doing all these patterns and you're adding the melody to it at the same time as one track, precision is an absolute, because when you have nothing else around it, nothing's going to hide it. And it's not just your performance. Your performance can't be done the same way as you would on an album like what I just did, because the album I just did is more of a band style. So you're performing to the other instruments. In the case of something like an instrumental, kind of thing, that is going to have to, my approach to performing will be different. It won't be the same. And the first album I did, Hometown Christmas, which I think you have, that album, that's almost all instrumental. And I was almost trying to go down that road at the time with some of those songs, but I probably had no business doing that because I had never done it before and I had no idea how to do it. So this is me kind of revisiting it now, but revisiting it in a way that I have the knowledge and expertise now after all these years to be able to approach it and actually get it done. So that's really what it's gonna be like. It'll take me a while to do it, but yeah, I've got the time.
Well, definitely looking forward to it. The new album again, Aspen Mountain Christmas, out now. Links down in the show notes to get that and also to Bob's website.
Thank you.
And for the curious who want to hear, who didn't hear it the first time around, I'll put a link to the previous episode where we talked about all the other Christmas albums. So
Right,
if
right.
you like that, and really, if you haven't listened to it, you should, because there's some great John Denver stuff in there.
Yeah, there is, and that's always been a staple of mine. So, if it wasn't for John Denver, I wouldn't be where I am today. So, I have to ask you a question, though, Ken. Just
Okay.
wrap it up, just curious. So, now that you have the new material, do you have any like standout two or three standout tracks that kind of grabbed you, more than others? I'm just more curiosity.
From the new album, it's,
Yeah.
it's tough because I listened to it very, I don't want to say critically, but to prepare to talk to you.
Yeah.
So there are things about it that I really like that the average listener wouldn't necessarily care about. Like, I
Right.
really love that your daughter's leading the chorus on Happy Christmas.
Yeah.
That just, I just really like that. So that makes that song a little more special to me.
Yeah.
I'm not familiar with Molly Weaver. I really like what she did with Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, the first track out. I like what you did playing around with stuff for the Grinch. I thought that that was really fun.
That was a tough one.
But and I like the medleys. I like the and people listen to this aren't going to believe it, but I like the Jingle Bell Rock Holly Jolly Christmas.
Oh, that's great. Especially after the one you got from
Yeah,
the 80s,
because
man.
it's fun,
Yeah.
and it's I like O Come, O Come, Emmanuel is not one of my favorite Christmas songs, but I like what you did with it. And it's, to me, that one sounds like a great song to put on Christmas Eve. The kids are in bed and you're sitting there and you're looking at the lights on the tree and you're just sort of relaxing. It's Christmas and this is me time.
Reflecting, yes.
And it, yeah. And I think that's a great song for that. But it's hard, I've had the other five albums for a
I
while
know.
now, so
Long time.
it's hard to pick a standout from the new ones. And I think, well,
Absolutely.
I really like the fun of the Snow Miser song, but that was on the last album,
Right,
that
right.
kind of thing.
That was the idea behind the Grinch, is I was trying to bring that element in with that, which actually it ended up working out, I think, pretty well. I had to change that one up too. I started off by singing it like Boris Karloff, but that didn't work. So we went to a storytelling approach, and thankfully that came together.
I also like that you have Same Old Lang Syne on there because not a lot of people cover that.
I don't think I've ever heard anyone cover it. I'm sure someone has. I just haven't
heard it. And I haven't, you know, save your emails, everybody. I haven't looked to see who else has covered it. Yeah. But I just, off the top of my head, I can't think of any other covers. And that's very rare for songs in the Christmas canon to find something.
It is. Yeah. Again, I have to go back to my friend Ken on that. He's the one that suggested it as an option, and I decided to do it. But one interesting little tidbit on that song, just for your awareness, is at the end, you know, it breaks down after the vocals are done, everything's all done, then it goes into this part of the song that you almost think, well, how did that ever exist in the first place? They come up with this, you know, a different time signature, and all of a sudden the saxophone comes in, does all these great melodies at the end of the song, and that's how it ends. Chord changes. I mean, it even does a slight key change, things like that. But I don't play the saxophone, and I don't know anyone that does. And I certainly didn't want to have to go out and hire someone to do that part, because I can't even imagine what that would have cost. But also too, Dan Fogelberg already did it. So I thought, I couldn't figure out how to make that work. I tried to find a way to not include it, and I'm like, I cannot hear this song without it. So I finally ended up pulling out my electric, and I did an electric slide part, because I was able to kind of take the slide and move it around in a way that the notes on or the progressions on a sax would actually move. And so when you listen to the song and you get to that part, you'll recognize, you know, the melodies and stuff like that. But that's a slide guitar. That's a slide on an electric guitar is how I pulled that off.
And I also love that both your kids are the cheerful crowd in Wonderful Christmas Time.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that until you mentioned it. Yeah, that's them and me. I'm doing that as well. And that's I just had them talking back and forth on, like, we did like 8 tracks of it. So you just combine it all in there, you put it in different areas of the mix, and it was fun. It was those are things that I think they had fun doing too. And it's like I said, you know, these are songs I would have never considered, but I'm happy I did them, because they're unique. You don't hear them covered really. And they're fun, just songs. They're good songs, you know?
Well, thanks so much for sharing so much about this and talking all about the new album.
Having me too. I appreciate it, Ken.
And thank you so much for listening and helping us share some Christmas spirit, and for continuing to support the Sounds of Christmas station and podcast. I already told you how to listen to the station, and you're listening to the podcast now, so my work here is just about done. All of our episodes are available on the Sounds of Christmas website. Just click the podcast tab. And we also have a Linktree page that lists most, if not all, of the sites that stream the Sounds of Christmas podcast. I'll put a link to that down in the show notes, and you can click it and find your favorite site, then click on over, and then subscribe, and you'll never miss another episode. If you have comments or suggestions on this episode, previous episodes, or the Sounds of Christmas station, feel free to reach out to me on social media or through the website. Thanks again, and may you always believe in Santa Claus.